The following podcast of SB Nation Radio is brought to you by BetDSI.com. With the NFL and college football seasons here, it's time to take that pigskin knowledge to the bank at BetDSI.com. With 20 years in the business, an impeccable reputation for great service, fast payouts, and an excellent mobile interface where you can play, win, and get paid, it's a no-brainer. BetDSI.com is the place to go. They have every wager option you could ever want or even imagine. And if you're watching a game, you can use BetDSI's live betting option to bet on the fly. Whether it's the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the UFC, esports, global sports, or even politics, celebrities. I mean, really, it doesn't matter. Whatever you feel like betting on, BetDSI has it for you. You get started today with BetDSI, you can get some extra bang for your buck, too. They're offering double your money for your first deposit. That's right, deposit to start winning and get up to $2,500 free. That's double your money right from the get-go. So what are you waiting for? Double your bankroll right now by joining BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101. The games are more fun when you get paid, so play at BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Glad to be with us on SB Nation AM here on a Monday morning. A lot of different things that occurred over the weekend. You know, like now we've been processing post Super Bowl. All right, what are the sporting events to watch? You know, maybe the NBA All-Star Game was on your list. Maybe the new AAF was on your list. College basketball, as we get closer and closer to the tournaments, the conference tournaments and March Madness. There was one game I wanted to watch on Saturday, and that was Tennessee on the road at Rupp Arena to take on Kentucky. I've loved the way the Vols have been played. Rick Barnes, in his third year now, I think, at Tennessee, we came in 2016. He's got Tennessee at number one, but there was always this idea of, are they overachieving? Are they a real national championship-level team? They went on the road to Rupp Arena to play Kentucky, and we all know how good Kentucky can be. When Kentucky doesn't win, John Calipari can usually find fault in his team rather than clearly being beaten by a better squad. And Tennessee lost the game. It lost pretty big. I mean, they tried to make a rally late, but they lost by 17 points on the road to a very good Kentucky basketball team. But Tennessee is a very good team, too. And John Calipari, who does a very good job of talking up his opponent, talking up even when he beats him by double digits, how good that team really is, I think was saying some honest things about the Volunteers. But it does go to show you how this is kind of a wide-open college basketball season. It always seems to be this. It's not like college football where Alabama is really good. Clemson's really good. Everybody's chasing them. Everybody's looking up them, Oklahoma, etc. College basketball, because of its tournament, is a little bit more open. But if you're just looking to see who the number one team is, or the couple of teams that are on top of the board, Tennessee really did belong there. Grant Williams is a legit national level player. Admiral Schofield is the same way. Barnes has done, you know, all that stuff at Texas that when he was with the Longhorns, his inability to get Texas a national title, there were resources there. People at Texas felt like he wasn't using them properly. People at Tennessee weren't too thrilled when Barnes got there, felt like he could have done better at Texas, and coming to Tennessee, you know, could have gotten better, but right now that marriage is working great. Despite the loss to Kentucky, I think the Volunteers are still a very, very formidable team come tournament time. I don't think this was an exposure that Kentucky brought down a Tennessee team that shouldn't have been up to begin with. I think they should have been up, stay up, and be that way all the way through the rest of the season.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And you can hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, and that is Ron with two N's. All right, you know what? I'm starting to see, this was a reach, Ron, I know. I'm starting to see a little bit of the method to the madness
in the Joe Flacco Denver Broncos signing from last week.
You're lying.
I did. No,
I think you're not lying to us, Tony. You're lying to yourself.
I know. I started thinking, and I was looking up some stuff over the weekend, and I started going, okay, I got to figure out why this Joe Flacco thing is occurring and why some Bronco fans like it. Because there's one thing to say, all right, John Elway's losing his marbles. But then there are people who were like, no, this is a pretty good deal for Denver. So I was like, I got to find out why. So here is the pervasive thought process behind trading for Joe Flacco. One, you get Joe Flacco, even though he's not an elite quarterback, you can't get an elite quarterback. So you might as well get somebody who can at least play the position. Two, they only gave a fourth round pick that they got from Houston anyway for the Demaryius Thomas trade, and they just released Demaryius Thomas. So they picked up an extra pick in a trade that didn't even provide value to the Texans. So they use it to get a guy who can start at quarterback. But here is the big reason why some people in Denver like this. There doesn't seem to be, and this is no offense to Drew Lock or Dwayne Haskins or anybody else in the draft, there doesn't seem to be the game-changing quarterback in the class of 2019. That all the quarterbacks have some risk to them, could pan out, could not pan out. There's no guy that stands out as a must-get quarterback. Okay, the Broncos have a lot of other needs, right? They're not picking up the option on Brandon Marshall at linebacker position. They need another corner to go up with Chris Harris Jr. They are looking for offensive line. The offensive line was pretty atrocious last year, and if you're going to use Philip Lindsay and Royce Freeman, you want to shore that up, especially with Mike Munchak as your offensive line coach. There is a lot of other needs, and now the Broncos with the 10th pick don't have to go quarterback. They at least have a guy who's a starter in this league, and if he didn't get hurt, would have remained a starter in this league. Even though he's not elite, he's not in the upper echelon, the reality is they weren't going to find an upper echelon. They could not get that guy in free agency. They weren't going to get that guy they couldn't pick up Nick Foles with that tremendous value given up that they don't have. So they get a guy that can play the position for new offensive coordinator Rick Scangarello, who's basically his first year as an offensive coordinator. So you don't have to bring in a rookie and have both of those guys learn it. And Elway gets potentially a winning record, if not maybe an 8-8 record, to avoid a third consecutive losing season. That's the Kool-Aid that many are drinking. And you know what? It makes a little bit of sense. I still don't like the deal, but it makes a little bit of sense. I can understand now saying, look, if Jonah Williams is on board and he's still available at 10, I will take him at 10, an offensive lineman. I can go down and get Greedy Williams, a cornerback from LSU, maybe at 10, because I need some secondary help. The Broncos next year not only will be playing the Patrick Mahomes and the Phillip Rivers, of course, twice, they'll also have Andrew Luck on their schedule that they get to play. And not only that, they have to play the NFC North with Aaron Rodgers and Matt Stafford being able to sling the ball a little bit. So there you go. You can get help in other areas instead of needing to take a quarterback and hoping to God that works out. There's also the belief that Elway doesn't want to take a quarterback in the draft because if he fails on this, it really cements the legacy that he doesn't know what he's doing at that position.
No, I could see that. And, let's be honest. We all know that, this draft – the quarterback class isn't that strong, especially coming off of what we just had last year.
Right.
And then, we can already project that, 2020, hey, that's going to be a much better class. You got Jalen Hurts. You got Tua Tagovailoa coming out. Then the following year after that, you got, the one that was built in a laboratory.
Yep.
So there's that idea and there's that thinking, maybe just put a Band-Aid on it for a year and kind of wait for where the chips fall. Maybe John Elway's in there's like, guys, I'm really wanting this team to go 1-15.
Yeah, no kidding.
And that way we're guaranteed the number one pick, and I can find us that franchise guy that will, last us for hopefully 10, 15 years.
It does make sense from a standpoint of, Elway's whiffed so many times. The Flacco deal, even if he whiffs on it, even if it doesn't work out, it wasn't costly to the team. It didn't cost them a lot. They didn't give up two first round picks, the one this year and the one next year. It didn't cost them a first, a second, and a third, or it cost them a fourth and a fourth that they picked up anyway. That I completely understand. You also get a starter in this league. And let me tell you, as we've talked about many, many times, he's not the best starter. I get it. But when you're talking about people who can play the position as a starter, he's at least getting one of those guys. I get it. I understand. We're not talking about a guy that's high on the statistical list. We're not talking about a guy that's, you know, was dominant last year. But we are talking about a guy who can play the position. When you sit him down in a room and you go over defenses in the league, he knows what those are. He knows how to play against them. He just is, you know, he's smart enough to play the position. He just needs to play it better. And right now, if I'm Elway and I bring in a brand new coaching staff and I'm willing to hire an offensive coordinator for the first time in Rick Scangarello, I might as well give him somebody that's at least can play that position. The problem that I have is, and this is the arguments that this is the counter argument I've made when people say, well, you know, Joe Flacco was a really good playoff quarterback and he was the guy that gave the Patriots a lot of fits. That's true, but that's what, 6 years ago, seven, 8 years ago? We're not talking about a guy who's done that recently. We're not talking about who's somebody who's coming off something like that. It's one thing to have a period of time in your football career where you were the guy and you were playing well, but as we've seen time and time again, there was a time where Mark Sanchez was doing that. Mark Sanchez beat the Patriots in the playoffs. Mark Sanchez got a Jets team to two AFC title games, losing to both Pittsburgh and the Indianapolis Colts. But that can disappear really quick. And for Joe Flacco, that disappeared pretty quick. So don't believe the idea that you could get a resurgence in this guy. What you're trying to get is something serviceable, something that can help you at least get that position manageable. So you're not putting a rookie back there against a terrible offensive line and drilling him. You're getting somebody that can at least play the position. That's the Kool-Aid. That's what I've been bringing up. So I'll buy it. I'll buy it. It just doesn't make me scream yay. I can get what they're doing. I can get what they're doing. It's much easier to sell your fan base on good offensive lineman or somebody high in the draft in terms of corner or linebacker. Devin White of LSU, speedy linebacker. They're looking for a new guy with Brandon Marshall not picking up the option on him. That could be a guy that they pick at 10. There's a lot of good things that can happen with that 10th pick for them to fill in other needs, and you don't whiff on that. The quarterback is where everybody is picking on Elway for, right? The fact that he can't land a quarterback. If he drafts Drew Locke and Locke is a bust behind a bad offensive line, then Elway is going to feel the effects of that again. Like, oh my God, here's the list of quarterbacks John Elway can't seem to do anything with. And Drew Locke is on that list. I think he wants to avoid that. This deal makes sense from the standpoint of, all right, let's put someone there that is going to win some games, lose some games, but we don't have to answer. We're not going to go, people aren't going to go, why didn't you get Dwayne Haskins instead of Drew Locke? Or why did you get Dwayne Haskins instead of Drew Locke? Or whatever reason that is. That he doesn't have to feel the pressure of failing on the quarterback pick. That's my thought. So I know it's a stretch, man. It's a stretch, but I'm not really super, you know, I'm sounding like I'm coming around on it. I'm just trying to, I'm processing it a little bit.
You're finding that silver lining or trying to find that silver lining. Like what was, all you're trying to do is step in the mind of Elway and go, what were you thinking?
What are you doing? That's the only thing I can come up with. And you may have found like,
maybe it's this. I think you're absolutely right though. I don't think he wants to draft a quarterback. I don't think he wants to do that and whiff again.
Yeah, I mean, it's bad.
The greatest quarterback all time can't recognize talent.
I mean, that's the narrative. First round pick on Paxton Lynch, and he's not on your team anymore.
Is he in the AAF now?
That's a good question. Why wouldn't he go to Memphis and play for Memphis?
He should. Maybe Memphis would show up for a game then.
I don't know where he ended up. I thought he was trying out for somebody. I'll have to look him up, but I thought he was trying out for another team. I don't know what that meant. You know, in terms of landing a spot or landing a backup third string kind of thing. I don't know. But that's it. Trevor Siemian, gone. Right? Brock Osweiler went on to Houston, bounced around, brought back again, now gone. Right? He can't get this position right. But you know what? To all of his critics, and listen, I was one of them for a while that said, anyone would have landed Peyton Manning. He did land Peyton Manning. There were other suitors for him. Right, it wasn't like Manning was looking for a job and everybody said no and Elway went, oh, okay, you can play for us. I mean, there were teams that went after him hard. He was the one that landed him. He was the one that convinced him to play there. So even though the evaluation of Manning is not necessary, you don't give him credit for that. You don't give him props for taking a chance on Manning when nobody else would. That's not what happened. people were willing to take a chance on Manning. People were willing to go the extra mile to try to land him. But he did. So I'll give him credit for that. And he also built a strong defense. So I give him credit for that. But his legacy is going to be tied to the quarterback position, obviously. And right now he has failed to do that. But there is a counter argument here that people in Denver are making, at least some of my friends are making in Denver in the media, that is it's a good one, but it misses the target a little bit. When you talk about teams that have Hall of Fame quarterbacks, very few of them are the Green Bay Packers who go from Favre to Aaron Rodgers, or the Colts that go from Manning to Andrew Luck. That there's this long period of time between when you lose a Hall of Fame quarterback to when you can land one again. And you have to struggle with that for a while. You have to bring in guys that aren't very good. You have to bring in guys that don't fill the position. If the Broncos are able to get Joe Flacco to a playoff level, not necessarily championship level, but to a playoff level again, then the period of time between the championship and that is really short when you compare to other teams. It becomes a problem.
Look at the Niners. Niners went from Montana to Young. They lucked out, but what have they done since Young?
Right. Since then, nothing, right? I mean, same thing with the Broncos. I mean, until Manning arrived, they went through, Bubby Brister. They went through, Bubby Brister for a brief period of time before was given to Brian Greasy. Then they went through Jake Plummer. Then they went to Jay Cutler. Then they went to Kyle Orton. I mean, the list of quarterbacks, when you lose a Hall of Famer, it's tough to replace that person with a Hall of Famer. It takes time. And again, no one's saying Flacco Hall of Fame, but if you can get the Broncos back into the postseason, you know, however you do, that's going to be hard in that division.
Or even if Flacco brought them on the brink of it and they just missed out because, you know, so-and-so was just that much better. Yeah, I think it'll be a successful season.
Yeah.
And as long as they go 9-7, right?
Yeah, you got to get don't do the three straight losing seasons. By the way, that team, that fan base is spoiled. When you think think about it. The second time they've lost back-to-back losing seasons since the early 70s. That is so amazing when you think about it. Because God, I went practically the whole 80s with the Steelers, them being awful, except for a few playoff runs. But for the most part, the early 90s were good, and then there was a period of time where the Steelers were terrible.
It definitely falls on deaf ears with people in Cleveland.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, amazing.
Two seasons. Man, we're lucky to have two winning seasons back-to-back.
Exactly. My goodness. All right, 800-777-2907 is the telephone number. That's the way I'm trying to paint it up a little bit. Coming up next, where could Bryce Harper sign if there was one indication on this date from the one particular team's office? We'll tell you where that is next.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, at O'Reilly Auto Parts, you're guaranteed to get the everyday low price of the parts you need. O'Reilly Auto Parts will match any local auto parts store price on any like item. O'Reilly Auto Parts has the parts you need at a guaranteed low price. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. So, Bryce Harper, still unsigned. Manny Machado, still unsigned. Major League Baseball pitchers and catchers already reported. Full squad's coming in next week. There is a rumor going around that one particular club is making their sales employees work today because they expect a big announcement. Now, I don't know if this is true, but this is the rumor that's going around, that they normally would have had the day off today, but they were asked to come in because there's a big announcement coming, and they want to field all the season ticket calls that can come pouring into the office. And that team is the Philadelphia Phillies. That Bryce Harper will be joining the Phillies. That's the rumor. Now, take that for what it is. Maybe they just wanted to make the employees come into work. Maybe the big announcement is like the Fanatic is going to be performing five shows nightly. I don't know. Maybe the Phillies are offering a dollar hot dog night, and they brought everybody back in. I don't know where this is going, but we shall see.
Just wanted to be done with.
Me too. I want to know where they're supposed to go. Where is he going?
I don't know.
Where is he going? Where's Manny Machado going?
Padres.
Well, now, who's up for the Manny Machado situation? Is it the White Sox the front runner for that? Because I don't really know.
I mean, according to Bob Nightingale, the Padres offered Machado 8 years, 240.
8 years, 240. All right.
Which I'm surprised because the Padres don't offer anyone contracts.
Yeah, that's pretty big.
that's a good chunk of change right there.
So I had read another rumor that the Phillies would offer 10 years, 310.
Okay.
All right. That the reason the person pointed that out was it would be getting Scott Boras off the hook again.
Right.
You know, which is... Don't pay 310 if you don't have to pay 310.
What if it's like 10 years, 280?
See, man, that's an amazing step backwards from what they originally thought.
Yeah, because they turned down 10 years, 300 from the Nationals. Because they knew they could get much, much more someplace.
Even if
they get 10 years, 310, don't you kind of look at it like, really?
Really? That's it?
That's right. That's the much, much, much more.
Remember, this was supposed to be the free agency. This was supposed to be the pursuit of a guy that was going to be the ultimate pursuit.
The $400 million man.
$400 million man. Boy, when Bryce Harper hits free agency, wait, you're going to see numbers you've never seen before. And I've always wondered, okay? I've always wondered when the bubble bursts, because the bubble can't last forever, right? There's a finite amount of resources for this. There's only so much people will pay for tickets. There's only so much television will pay for the broadcasting rights. There's only so much advertising will pay for the product, right? Like, you know, people won't pay $300 to go see one Major League Baseball game, right? In the middle, you know, middle of the deck of the stadium. So there is a point where revenue is going to be, okay, we're falling back a little bit. Sponsors aren't renewing. People aren't renewing their season tickets because they're too expensive. Where's the bubble? A bubble might be a player making $60 million a year. I don't know where that bubble is, but we know the bubble is somewhere before things start really falling apart. I mean, you can't pay a player $1 billion a season because there's not enough finance.
Not yet.
So where is that money? Right, not yet. The problem with the bubble argument, though, is people said the same thing in the 70s. When free agency was really going to start taking off with Curt Flood, they said, "Oh well, you know, no, players won't make $1 million a year. That's crazy." Oh, and then they did. No, then two, then five, then 10, then 15, then 30, and now we were talking $40 million a year for a baseball player, right? And that seemed reasonable given the economics. It seemed like that could happen. Scott Boras believed it could happen. And I don't think Boras was doing that like aim high, find a room in the middle.
Right.
I think Boras really thought he could get $400 million for Harper. Young guy, potential, skyrocket potential, all of that. And just baseball's economics are saying, I don't think we have to do that. We don't have to do that.
Yeah, I mean, part of the problem is, which is very vastly different than the NFL, that a lot of baseball's economics is in local dollars.
Exactly.
And,
right.
You know, and I'm sorry, but your normal local businesses don't, unless you can't. I mean, there's no physical possible way for you to try to gain a payroll off of local dollars that includes a $40 million a year contract. There just isn't enough money.
There isn't. So,
you know, Pa's Exterminators isn't going to drop, you know, millions of dollars to advertise on, you know, for your baseball team. They don't have
it. Is free agency broken, like Justin Verlander says, or has economic I don't want to say it's smart, but I'm just saying more reasonable economics are stepping into baseball.
I don't think free agency is broken. I think free agency expectations have reached their max.
Yeah, well, I remember when 2008, 2009, gas prices were going through the roof?
Yep.
Remember, they were like $4.30.
Yeah, do I remember.
Remember that?
I had a Chevy Tahoe.
And then remember right towards the end of 2008, in early 2009, prices started to decline?
Yep.
They started to plummet. I remember living off an exit in Colorado where there was a gas station, one of those big stop here touristy gas station. It had a big sign on the highway. And every time I would drive home from work, I would see the prices fall. And I remember talking to a guy who really had his hand, who was at the radio station. He was one of the economic guys, and he had a real finger on the pulse of all that investment banker, that kind of thing. And he told me, he said, listen, the reason gas prices are going down is that they should have never been that high to begin with. It's all the speculation, should have never been that high to begin with. That's what I'm wondering is going on with baseball, is that some of the deals that broke the bank, like Giancarlo Stanton, should have never been that high to begin with. It's just when you play this competitive economic game, that's what happens sometimes. But that doesn't set the bar necessarily when cooler heads prevail. There might have been one team that went, we're losing our mind in signing this guy to a $375 million contract or $325 million contract. But the reality of it is the other teams go, well, that's crazy, but that's not the norm. Just because they did it, that doesn't mean we'll do it. It doesn't mean when somebody comes along with a better statistical or a better wins above replacement, or they do things differently, or they're just an overall better player. It doesn't mean the value of that guy supersedes the value of the guy the crazy team signed. That's what I'm wondering, if that's what's happening in baseball right now, because that to me is more reasonable than the idea that everyone's getting together going, let's pay guys less as possible.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
Well, really no surprise. Daytona 500 did finally have the big one, the big crash everybody waits for on these super speedways. It was started by Paul Menard, a 21-car accident with 10 laps to go at the Daytona 500. Afterwards, Paul Menard said, basically, here's what happened.
Strong speed weeks for Paul Menard. Unfortunately, both races that you were up front at the end, you end up on the rollback. Tell us what happened on the back straightaway there with the bump draft and when it went wrong.
Yeah, it was go time, and I was pushing a 95, and it looked like he was trying to get to the middle. So I tried to get to the outside and just barely hooked him. It wrecked a lot of cars, so that was my bad. Wrecked a lot of cars. I feel bad about that.
Well, what is he supposed to do, cry?
I don't get the feeling that he feels that bad, Tony.
A lot of cars crash. My bad.
My bad.
What are you going to do?
Yep, that one's on me.
Running into the 95. What are you going to do?
Kind of hooked him there, and he spun him out a little bit, and my bad.
What are you going to do? 21 cars, all gone. Well, we'll try again next week.
But see, I think that is part of the problem that you were alluding to.
Maybe
I would
so,
love
right?
for him to come out and say, you know, just be
that like, wasn't my fault.
Just. Like, those cars screwed up.
Blaming me? What are you talking about blaming me? Do you see the 14 bang right into my side? At least whatever it is.
Listen, I win races, and I'm trying to win a race, and I got 95 sitting in front of me driving like a grandmother.
Oh, man. Man, that race. You watch these wrecks, man. They're crazy. They're crazy. I don't know what I'd do if I was a driver and all of a sudden just chaos. I'd be like, I'd be holding on for dear life going, oh, my God.
See, at
forget
one point,
it. I'm dead.
At one point, and I don't know any of the drivers, so I'm not even going to bother trying to, you know, fake like I do. But the number 10 car was on top of the number 38.
Oh, yeah.
And they're, you know, I mean, it's in slow motion, but you know they're still screaming around the track, like probably around 100 miles per hour. I don't care who I am. You're going to, the first stop that I need to make is wardrobe change.
Oh, no doubt. That's what I've always thought. Like, that would be me sitting. You're going 180 miles an hour, and all of a sudden somebody bumps somebody. Let's say you're even five cars back from that, right? And some guy bumps another guy, and next thing you know, cars are spinning wildly out of control right in front of you, and you're just going 190 miles an hour, and all of a sudden you're like, what are you going to do? I can't avoid this. They're everywhere. I just got to take it and see what happens, and then we'll ride this out and see what happens. And, you know, luckily the cars are safe enough, you know, you feel like you'd be all right, but that's what happens. These cars go squirrely, and then you got to ride it out. You got to try to avoid them if you can. Maybe you can't. You just get caught up in it. 21 cars. He bumped a guy, and 21 cars got out of the race, and they had to stop the race.
And one car was on top of the other. Man, if I'm sitting in that 38 and I'm looking and all that, I see like, oh, look, made in China, says his muffler.
Right. I don't know.
I'm sorry. I'm out. I'm out of the race. I'm like, you know what? I'm done. I wouldn't make it. I can't look at the bottom of a car going 150 miles per hour anymore. That's not for me. You need to change my pants.
I saw this story that there were Daytona 500. There was one team that had two female tire changers on it. That, by the way, that's kudos to them, because that's a tough job. When I was learning the ropes of this business, I got invited to this NASCAR camp thing. It was like this where you could learn to drive a race car. They gave me like a free admission if I did a story on it. And it was cool because like you learned how to drive the car, but you also had to do things like change a tire, and you kind of learned what they did in the pits, you know, round of wedge, that kind of thing, use the terminology. And so they had me change a tire, and my first reaction was how heavy the tire was. I've changed my own tire before. I couldn't believe how heavy the tire was. But the lug nut, the gun, that wasn't as easy as I thought it was going to be. And I know it was my first time, and I probably would have gotten the hang of it. But I thought once I got the tire on that the gun itself would just do all the work, and I would just go. Instead, you stick it, and it's not tight enough, so you have to reverse it. Then I had to do it again. I changed one tire in like a minute 10, like 70 seconds, and the professionals do it in like 5.
Yeah,
it was incredible. So kudos to them.
If the pros do it in double digits, you know, they're probably getting fired.
Oh my God, yeah. Are you kidding? If they change one tire in like 25 seconds or whatever, forget it. They're done. You can't do that. I'm like, I can barely get it on right. I'm going to stick it on there. Yeah, granted, I wish if I had more practice, I probably would have been better.
Yeah, obviously.
Man, I thought the lug nut gun was going to be the most fun. I'm like, get the stupid tire on, and then the gun is going to be easy.
See, I don't want to hear that, because if I was ever in a pit crew, that's the one job I'd want to do. I wouldn't want to be the guy holding a gas tank, because I'd be too afraid.
Yeah, right?
Because the car's still,
it all over
the car's still running, and, you know, you're sitting there holding this big, gigantic, you know, 20. It's like holding one of those like Arrowhead, you know, those gigantic water bottles.
Right, exactly.
Above your head. It's like, I'm not going to hold this above my head, and then this car just screams away while gas is still being poured out. It's like, I'm going to blow up.
Man, though, those tire guys, seriously, like, it's you know what we were talking, remember we were talking about the kicker in the NFL is always under pressure, but nobody ever talks about the holder? Like when they always like the kicker, no one ever says, hey, is that holder nervous? Like he's got to get that ball and he's got to plant that thing. He can't fumble it. He can't mess that up.
Because we just assume like he can't mess it up. That's an easy job.
Exactly. It seems easy enough. Like those tire guys, if they don't get that thing on immediately, picking up the tire and lining it up so that it fits perfectly the first time, you're going to hear about it. I mean, that crew chief and the driver are going to go nuts. So you got to make sure you do that perfectly every time, every single time. And you can see them just waiting, and the car comes and they jump over the wall it's fantastic. So God bless those two women who are on the pit crews, because that's a really tough
It's a grueling job.
It's a grueling job.
Yeah, drive. Yeah. Driving seems so much easier than being in a pit crew.
Right. So, man, 21 car.
You just need to have large enough stones to have a car be on top of you, I guess.
21 car crash.
My bad.
That's crazy. My bad. Sorry. What are you gonna do?
You can put that one on me. Well, and then, you know, that interview went a little bit further because he went up to, I don't know, whoever the driver for the 95 car was. He went up to him afterwards. They shook hands and hashed it out. Said, you know, back in the day, back in my NASCAR.
Yeah, why didn't they beat each other up?
One
guy
decking the other one.
Exactly. I'm going to kill Yarborough getting in fights.
Yeah. I mean, but nowadays, like, yeah, they shook hands, they made up, you know, no harm, no foul. And it's like, no. There was fights.
How come I get road rage at 35 miles an hour when somebody cuts me off? How would I do in a NASCAR race if I was hugging the back end of a bumper at 190?
Then you hooked him.
And the guy the guy does something and it causes me to ram into him and spin out of control.
Man, if I was in Paul Maynard's shoes, or you know, and you know, just sitting there going my bad, I would be expected to be hit.
Of course, right?
I would expect it to get punched because everyone's sitting there is like, dude, you knocked me out of the race. You know, they drop in the standings, they drop, you know, dollar figures, everything goes away when you get to one of these big crashes, and then you can all point at one guy, and he's just like, yeah, my bad. I would just sit in there like, you know what, just line up and, you know, treat me like that one woman, that hysterical woman in Airplane.
Yeah, right.
You know, just everyone gets a shot. Everyone takes a turn. You're absolutely right.
Yep, I agree. I agree. I would that would be me.
And I think, like you were alluding to with NASCAR, is, you know, maybe one of the problems with NASCAR right now is just everyone's just like, sorry. It's like they're all Canadian.
I'd like to see a little bit of villainy. I'd like to see a little bit. Every now and then it pops up, but I'd like to see a little bit more.
Just want somebody to punch somebody after a big fight.
My personal observation of what of the sport. Still exciting. It's still pretty cool. It's still neat. Just, I don't know. Just want to see a little bit more.
It is amazing
separation from the driver's personalities.
You know, it is one of those jobs or one of those sports where we all know we can drive. You know, and we don't know if we can drive well, but we all know how to drive. And we can relate to NASCAR drivers a little bit more because he's like, you know what? Yeah, I know what it's like to drive really fast for 500 miles because I've done it. But, you know, it's a whole different level. So there's a whole, you know, it's like, you remember how we were talking about golfers? Like, you know, part of the problem with golfers sometimes is that it's, you know, when they seem pedestrian, we're like, oh, okay, yeah, you know, you guys aren't that good. You know, you're a professional, but I can make that shot.
Right.
And I feel sometimes with NASCAR it's the same way. It's like, you know, I could probably drive for 500 miles around in a circle and get paid for it. I just don't think I could do it at 210 miles per hour.
I don't think I could do it at 210 miles an hour. I will tell you this though, the one thing that I give these guys a lot of credit for is it's the concentration level. Like, cause you know, I'm teaching my son how to drive. And one of the things I have to keep telling him is driving is so easy that you'll daydream and you'll forget what you're doing. You don't know what you can literally drive down the street and not realize you've driven down the street. And I wonder that these guys, cause they're concentrating and sometimes they'll stay in a spot and they'll be like, I'm going to ride this for like 50 laps, right? Where the action is going to come later. I'm going to hang out here for a while and then make a move. So you've got to be concentrating knowing that I'm not going to get out of this lane. I'm not going to go pass. I'm going to stay in this draft for however long I'm going to stay in there for, but I've got to keep my concentration level up.
Yeah, you're doing it for fuel consumption.
Right.
You're doing it just, maybe a little bit of edge.
Just keep pacing and whatnot.
Just draft right, you know, 3 inches off this guy's bumper. So he's pulling you and you're saving fuel.
And you're doing it for hours and hours and hours. So God bless you, man. It's if you can keep that concentration, that's pretty impressive. And the physicality of just kind of hanging on to that car while it's racing around a track. 800-777-2907 is the number if you want to get into the conversation. Also on Twitter at Tony D Radio and also at Ron Culver. And that's Ron with two N's on SB Nation AM.
This is Mike Herzing from Let's Talk Wheels with an automotive tip brought to you by the great folks at Jeep. Listeners email me every week asking which fuel to use, regular or premium. The answer is in your owner's manual. You remember, it's a small book in the glove box that most people never look at until there's a problem. If it says premium recommended, then that means the higher octane helps performance a little. That's it. If it says premium required, then your engine's really designed for it and you need to use it. Luckily, only a few high-performance and luxury cars need it, not many. Folks, running premium fuel is not giving your car a treat. But what I would do is spend a few cents more per gallon and buy a top-tier fuel. Top-tier fuel has more than the minimum additives and cleaners that your engine really needs. All the major brands are top-tier fuels. Simple rule of thumb, folks. Buy your groceries at the grocery store and get your fuel at a major brand station. This is Mike Herzing. Let's Talk Wheels are brought to you by the great folks at Jeep. For more of my tips, go to letstalkwheels.com and you can find us on Facebook as Let's Talk Wheels.
To celebrate the Jeep President's Day event, we're creating our own motorcade of the most awarded, best-selling SUV brand ever to hit the road and explore what lies beyond it. Leading the procession is Jeep Wrangler, American legend, and the 2019 Motor Trend SUV of the Year. Following close is Jeep Grand Cherokee, the most awarded SUV ever, and versatile Jeep Compass with its class-leading technology and connectivity. And rounding it all out is Jeep Cherokee with its nimble 31 mpg highway. But great deals on this motorcade will be coming to an end soon. So hurry in today to the Jeep President's Day event. The Jeep brand and Jeep Grand Cherokee have received more awards over their lifetime than any other SUV or SUV brand. Based on compact SUV segmentation, OEM website, auto knowledge, EPA estimated 4-cylinder, 4x2. Actual mileage may vary. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
You're listening to SB Nation AM. on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM. I have a line that I use with my kids, and I've used it for pretty much forever, ever since they started realizing, oh, we can, you know, insult each other like siblings do. And my line is, I don't want justice, I want peace. I don't really care. Like, they'll come up to me, oh, so-and-so said so, they did this. I'm like, make up and be done and go your separate ways. I just want peace. I'm not interested in having a court hearing on to who started this. You both are at fault. You both are driving each other crazy. Get out of here. I feel the exact same way about this Antonio Brown, Pittsburgh Steelers / Ben Roethlisberger story. I don't want justice. I want peace. If you want to leave the Steelers, then just get the Steelers to trade you and get out of here. This idea that you're going to call out Roethlisberger on Twitter, it's a matter of respect. He doesn't respect me. You're liking tweets that accuse Roethlisberger of his past sexual assault allegation. It feels like we're in grade school, does it not, with the Steelers and Ben and Antonio Brown? Like, I feel like it's another issue all the time where I just want to go, look, just tell them you want to get traded. Tell them you're willing to go certain places. Tell them you don't want to play for the Steelers anymore. Have them work their magic and get you out of town. But stop with this childish, oh, he doesn't respect me. He called me out. I'm going to call him out. Now he's going to call me out. And are we not adults here? Can we all calm down a little bit?
No, I think what we need now, we need the Steelers just to write a note to Antonio Brown. But it needs to be like, do you want to be traded? Yes or no? But they can't. Right. The Steelers can't give it to Antonio Brown. So they probably need to give it to maybe the Bengals first to give to Antonio Brown. You see what I'm saying? Like, you can't,
right. Oh,
they
yeah,
can't
right.
do it directly, because then you obviously know that it's coming from the Steelers. You don't want to do that.
Oh, God, I feel like we're dealing with children over there with the Steelers. Just, I know, maybe I'm more ticked off because it's my team, but my God.
No, it's annoying.
Just chill out.
The Steelers aren't my team, and, you know, you just constantly see Antonio Brown, like, you know, hey, thanks for the memories, Pittsburgh. It's like, you're still a Steeler, dude. Where are you? They would save that one for later. Oh, you want to leave, so you're trying to make it uncomfortable. I get it.
Yeah, just
because, like, he doesn't want to break up with the girl, so he's trying to get the girl to break up with him.
I understand his feelings were hurt. Roethlisberger did call him out on a number of times, but my God, everybody, just calm down. Just listen. Be professional about it. Tell the Steelers you're not comfortable there anymore. You're willing, you know, you want to go some. Here are those list of teams. See if those teams can offer some value. Let the Steelers work their magic, and then you get to leave, and you get to be happy, and the Steelers get to be happy. But instead, just keep swimming in a pile of petty filth. Everybody with the black and gold.